Welcome to Capital Connections. I'm Jackie Yamanaka. This week, our topics from the 2017 Montana legislature are coal and prohibiting state courts from considering foreign laws. Before we get to the measure, supporters and opponents have dubbed the Sharia Law Bill, we'll visit with Senator Duane Ankeny of Colstrip on what the legislature is doing to mitigate the planned closure of two coal-fired power plants in Colstrip. We're visiting here in your office, and thank you so much for the invitation to sit down and chat with you.
You bet. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Jackie.
Certainly, the future of Colstrip has been uncertain for several years. This is not new. You tried during the 2015 session in particular to try to provide some certainty, particularly for those coal-fired generating units. Now there's a settlement. The owners have said they want to shut them down. I wanted to check in with you to see where are we on that, and then you're trying to provide some help for your constituents there in Colstrip.
Jackie, where we're at, anybody knows. I don't know where we're at. We're working towards any kind of incentive within our legislative power and within reason to provide incentives for those owners to continue to run to 2022. And July 1st, 2022, that is the date the court provided that they have to be, they have to start decommissioning. So we haven't got anything definite out of the owners as to when they're going to shut down. They threaten with this and they threaten with that. But the fact remains that I believe Puget Sound Power, which provides power to the Pacific Northwest, primarily Washington, they still need the megawatts. They'll need them till then. Talon, they say they're losing money. You know, it's hard to say just what that means. Are they losing money they think they should make, or are they losing real dollars? I don't know. But what we're trying to do is keep them going till 2022. That would give us an opportunity to get some retirements in a power plant. That would enable us to keep most of the young people. The mine, some of those will retire, but the miners will be impacted much more than the power plant, I believe, because it's pretty defined. So many ton of coal, so many mines. Miners, you take away 3 million tons of coal, then you get rid of so many miners.
So,
period.
So basically, am I hearing you correctly that what you're trying to do is to keep the date certain, because there's been rumors swirling that the owners are looking at shutting down perhaps even as early as this year?
Well, yeah, and that's what we're trying to avoid, is a early shutdown. We're doing, like I say, there's other people in the legislature that has joined on finally. It ain't something that myself and Representative Keene is trying to carry on our back. We have help now. We have numbers guys that's trying to come up with incentives to allow these, as well as we're out there actively trying to find somebody that'll buy Talon out, you know, I mean, and so we're doing everything we can to get those numbers up to 2022, and that's kind of a tough nut to crack, but I'm fairly optimistic, but that's just the kind of person I am.
And there are various individuals like the Attorney General who are trying to intervene,
right,
with the utility, and so it's not just, action is not just happening in this Capitol building.
No, and that's a good question, because that leads to a very long answer. The Attorney General is interceding in the rate case out in Washington, and he's interceding because of decommissioning costs and social costs, and what's that's going to cost Montana. And believe me, shutting down these two plants, The epicenter might be Colstrip, but the fallout throughout Montana is going to be much worse. I mean, you got Talon that provides low-cost, reliable power to the industrials, 15 industrials in the state. You got the workers there, the taxes being paid on them transmission lines coming out of there in several different counties, and you have production taxes coming into the state. You've got taxes going into the county, and these wages spent 90% of them in Billings. I mean, that's going to be an impact across the state. And this, which leads me to the reason for the decommissioning bill, which would cushion some of these impacts to not only some of it to the workers, but not that much. But a lot of it goes to the counties. A lot of it goes to the school districts in Coal Country, Rosebud, Forsyth, you know, Hysham, Colstrip. And then some of it comes back to the state to help them transition out of that. I mean, you've been around the halls this session. You know, it was just a drop in production and in several different areas in Montana that's got us crunching numbers up here and stealing from Paul to pay Peter, you know. And but you drop this much revenue out of this system in one fell swoop, and it's going to be chaos.
Well, I was going to add, too, Senator, we've got this coal tax trust, and we've got the interest off the trust and all the sub-trusts that are paying things like libraries, like the arts, roads, bridges, as well as irrigation, you know, the...
It goes clear across the state. The Treasure State Endowment Fund, which should be the Treasure State Coal Endowment Fund. Coal pays for all of that. They fund the libraries. They fund the growth through agriculture. They fund the regional water projects. It goes on and on, which, you know, if foresight was good as hindsight, a long time ago we should have said, no, a certain amount of this interest money goes into a fund for when they shut those plants down. That's the way the hard rock mining is. A portion of the hard rock mining taxes go to a fund that's there when they shut the mining down. We wouldn't have this problem. We'd have the money to take care of the social, the economic costs of decommissioning.
Well, I was going to say, let's talk about the coal tax trust. It's, you know, call it $1 billion. And do you see the state of Montana then needing to tap that principle for the rainy day?
No. No, because they don't see the rainy day. People that is absolutely opposed to coal will protect that coal trust with their dying breath. And you know, I was in the coal mines for 38 years. I helped put some of that money in there. But that does not make any difference to those people that think that's a sacred cow. It's, you're not going to tap that rainy day trust.
So are you resigned now to the fact that your community of Colstrip will lose units 1 and 2?
For sure.
And, you know, now you're just in this mode of trying to keep your community alive.
Exactly. It's a reactionary mode. I mean, this decommissioning bill, this will help transition us. But in the end, we're going to have a smaller school. We're going to have less money for roads and bridges. You know, we're going to feel the impacts pretty significantly in Colstrip. And this decommissioning bill really don't have anything to do with this. But you got to think about, those houses ain't worth a plug nickel. And like most people, you pay off your house, that's your little stake. That's your whole card, is that house that you've got paid off. You've got a house paid off in Colstrip, it ain't worth nothing. So that's going to be tough to get through that, you know.
So there's your Senate colleague who has a proposed study bill to talk about looking at the future of coal, looking at all of these things. He has also suggested perhaps turning units 1 and 2 and that property into a gigantic coal sequestration project.
Well, we're going to have to get more serious about coal before we go into a coal sequestration because of the what they call a parasitic load on your plant. That's the power it takes to run whatever. And right now to try to sequester that coal, that almost doubles the price of electricity on your output. So if we can figure out how to get around that, or if there's some federal help there with designing the system and successfully operating it, that would make a lot of difference, because CO2 is a commodity. And we have the Cedar Creek Anticline about 90 miles away. Of course, that goes through pipelines, which seems to be the protest of the day. But we do have a market for that. So that would help balance those costs tremendously. And Mike Phillips, Senator Phillips out of Bozeman, does have a good bill. It's something that we probably, again, hindsight, we should have been looking at this and keeping up with it all along, is what are we going to do when we start losing this coal revenue from coal strip and the other related revenue? I mean, we talk about the coal, but the taxes paid on all that equipment is enormous. I don't have a number for you right now, but it's significant. And it's at least what we're down on revenue now, and then maybe some more. But we got to figure out what we're going to do. We got to prioritize that money that we're using out of there and put it to better use. And I would say that starting right now, we need to divert a good portion of that interest into a fund that, if in the future, if they decommission 3 and 4, this is no longer an issue. We have the money there to take care of that.
So it doesn't matter to you who sits in the office of president, whether there's an R or a D by their name. I mean, what I'm hearing you saying is something at, you want to see people come to the table and start throwing out ideas about what is the future of coal when it comes to Montana's future.
Right. It's all right to say we're going to put coal miners back to work, we're going to do this, which is music to my ears, but I want to see them go back to work. I want to see the tonnages go up. That's what I want to see.
So are you going to be fighting then for a continuation of the coal industry, or are you going to concede in some ways that the environmental groups, as they're trying to reduce the amount of greenhouse gases and try to work to mitigate climate change?
I've requested that at my funeral I want sung "He's Just an Old Chunk of Coal." So that should answer your question. I'll never give up. I'll have that chunk of coal in my hand the day they put me away. I think it's a good industry. I think there's a lot of people has made a good living, and it's a safe industry. It's safer than a lot of industries. And the money it puts into schools, there isn't another industry in this state that pays about 37% taxes. When you put severance tax, ad valorem taxes, gross proceeds tax, it all adds up to about 37% taxes, and they beg to mine coal and they won't let them. And they have no alternative for revenue. So come on, let's figure out how to do, we've already figured out how to do it right. And so it's a shame that coal is in the shape it's in. We shouldn't have to be explaining ourselves. I mean, we should do it right, mine it responsibly, but then get out of our way and let us mine some coal.
Well, that will have to be the last word, Senator, because we're out of time. Thank you so much, Senator Duane Ankeny of Colstrip.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Capital Connections. Our next guest is Senator Keith Regier of Kalispell. The chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee is a sponsor of Senate Bill 97. Thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome, Jackie.
And we're here to talk about your Senate Bill 97. And first, I wanted to ask you, why did you decide to sponsor the bill this year in the 2017 session?
Senate Bill 97 was is the exact same thing that was introduced last session by a senator from the Flathead, and it was introduced late in the session, didn't really have a very good hearing, and was tabled in committee. And I had constituents that came to me and showed me the bill, and I thought, that makes a lot of sense. It looks like a good bill, so agreed to carry it.
Do you have any personal interest in this bill?
Personal interest? As far as affirming our Constitution, yeah.
I'm curious then, let's back up a little bit and talk about the intent of the bill.
The intent of the bill? The intent of the bill, as far as I'm concerned, is to reaffirm that what we do in our courts follows the U.S. and Montana Constitution. And in the bill, in new section, paragraph 1, it says it is the public policy of this state to protect its citizens from the application of foreign law when the application of foreign law will violate a right guaranteed by the Montana Constitution or the United States Constitution, including but not limited to due process, freedom of religion, speech or press, and any right of privacy or marriage as specifically defined by the Constitution and the laws of this state. And when I read that, I thought, that's great. It's just reaffirming what we're doing. Don't let any kind of foreign law come into our courts.
Is there a problem? Has this been a problem?
I was disappointed to find that there had been in other courts in the United States. Example, in a New Hampshire court, a couple married in India and they moved to the United States. They lived here for 10 years, became citizens, had children, and then they wanted to divorce using Indian law for the divorce, which ran contradictory to U.S. law. Another case in Michigan where a couple from Sweden divorced and the husband tried to get out of paying child support using Swedish laws. Then I was surprised to find that there are several cases where lower courts did use foreign law in their the verdict that they brought, and then it was appealed and turned over at the appellate level. As far as Montana, I couldn't find anything had gone on here. So in that respect, Senate Bill 97 is proactive.
The American Civil Liberties Union recently put out a report, and I should note that the ACLU is not a partisan organization. They could not find true instances of cases where the courts have indeed followed foreign law, religious beliefs, or customs.
Well, like those that I just stated, they were real cases. I have a list of some, you know, that if you want to look them up, you can.
Okay.
And, you know, even that aside, the world is changing. And to affirm that the U.S. Constitution needs to be followed and not have other country laws come into place, I think that's really important. You need to stop and look at why do immigrants come here? Why do they want to come to the United States? I know of no other country that is, people are trying to get in. and even risking their lives to get into countries like the United States. I would say part of that reason is because of our Constitution. That's what makes us a great country. That's what we were founded on, and we need to just affirm that we will follow that Constitution.
Now, the judiciary likes to say that, you know, they do, that this is a country of the rule of law. And so why would a U.S. court then take the position that it will recognize foreign law, again, foreign religions and customs, when it makes a decision?
That would be a good question. Why would they? I would hope that they wouldn't, but then, like the few examples I gave you, it has been tried. So, for me too, Senate Bill 97 tells the courts to don't even consider a foreign law, just stick with the U.S. Constitution.
Now, the American Civil Liberties Union, I go back, and they say that the courts have actually thrown out a similar law to this, and I believe it's the state of Oklahoma, and that the Montana law is based pretty closely with that particular law. Are you concerned that this bill, should it become law, could be ruled unconstitutional?
I don't know how affirming to follow the Constitution could be unconstitutional. The Oklahoma law that you talked about, I haven't read it. I don't know anything about that case.
I also want to bring up another point that critics say this bill is, they call it the Sharia law bill, and that it has a distinct bias against people of Muslim, who are Muslim.
You know, I've been kind of surprised at the passion of both proponents and opponents of the bill, and yeah, both sides have brought up Sharia law, so must really be something important to both sides. What I know of Sharia law, it really shouldn't take place in America. It doesn't really fit our Constitution. But 97, back to that, it doesn't single out any group or any religion, any tribal law, or anything that people bring over. It's just reaffirming that we will follow our Constitution.
There's certainly concern in western Montana because refugees who may be Muslim are locating, and they've been welcomed into Missoula. Are you concerned that by being the sponsor of Senate Bill 97, that you are sending a message to either side, either those who welcome the refugees or those who have concerns about refugees relocating to Montana, that somehow these refugees are a threat to Montanans and a threat to public safety, security?
Well, I'm not surprised, but disappointed that there are those that would interpret it that way and then pass on that feeling, and that's disappointing because, again, if you read the bill, we're reaffirming due process, freedom of religion. That'd be for Muslims as well, freedom of speech, press, any right to privacy, that's guaranteed in our Constitution. So there shouldn't be that fear.
What other, I guess, concerns do you want to allay from critics or supporters that you hear that you feel is outside of your intent for this bill?
Well, that this bill isn't singling out any group or individuals at all. It's protecting the rights of each individual in Montana and the United States under our Constitution. It's just reaffirming it. To me, it's like saying to the pledge to the flag, being sworn into office. Why do we do that? We shouldn't have to do that. Is that offensive to people that we're pledging allegiance to our country, that we are swearing allegiance to uphold our Constitution? That's all that I see 97 doing. It's, an affirmation that we just keep following the Constitution. Don't get sidetracked with any foreign laws that might come in. You know, we're a country made of immigrants, but we can't have a lot of different laws and be one country. E pluribus unum, one out of many. So to be that one, it has to be under our Constitution.
Here at the legislature, every floor session starts with a prayer, really, and the Pledge of Allegiance, where God is mentioned. Mm-hmm. And do you see also protections for those who are Muslim? Other protections for those who may not necessarily agree with that?
I would say yes. And I would say that's probably one of the things that attracted him here is religious freedom that is protected under the Constitution. And our Constitution, even though it was founded in the beginning on Judeo-Christian values, I think those are values that people around the world are attracted to and wanting to live in our country. And yeah, people can come here and practice their religion freely.
If there are somewhere around, I see the number around 10 states or so that either have passed a bill similar to Senate Bill 97 or are considering, then it becomes for immigrants who are coming here a mishmash depending on which state they land in. Do you see any movement toward having Congress consider a bill like this?
Not that I know of. But again, the states that have passed laws like Senate Bill 97, I don't see that there's problems there for their people, for any of them. There isn't the mass hysteria and picking on groups or individuals that some of the opponents would say would be happening. So I don't see the problem with the bill.
Okay. And the bill has passed the Senate. It has been now shuttled over to the House. And it sounds like, anyway, that opposition, it could have more opposition ramping up once it gets to the House Judiciary Committee. What are you anticipating?
You know, after being in the legislature for several sessions, I don't know that you can anticipate anything. I mean, there are some bills that you think there's really benign, and there's a lot of proponents or opponents, and other bills that you think, boy, this is really going to bring a lot of testimony, and hardly anybody shows up. So I don't know. I hope that the opponents and proponents, too, see the bill for what it is, just an affirmation of our Constitution and our constitutional rights, and see that as affirming what we're doing is right, and don't let any outside foreign influence change that.
Are you concerned, if the bill does pass the legislature and lands on the governor's desk, that he may just whip out a veto?
I guess you might have to interview him when that time comes to find out, but that's the way the process is set up. Legislature passes the bills, we put him on his desk, and he has shown that he's not afraid to veto bills, and he has vetoed others of my bills in the past, so I don't know. I don't know what he'll do with this one. I hope he'll see it for what it is, just an affirmation of our individual constitutional rights.
Well, Senator, Mr. Chairman, we have run out of time. I want to thank you so much, Senator Keith Regeer of Kalispell, for talking about his Senate Bill 97.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Capital Connections. Thank you for joining me. I'm Jackie Yamanaka. The Capital Connections theme music is courtesy of the Alex Nauman Trio. Capital Connections is a production of YPR News.